So when I was in seminary, I've told some of you about this. When I was in seminary, I worked in the seminary chapel, and we put on worship for the community 4 days a week. And one day, my friend John and I were planning a worship service based on a story in the Gospel of John, where after Easter, after the resurrection, Jesus appears to his followers who are fishing, and they're having a really trouble fishing. And then Jesus appears and says, you know, cast your nets to the right side of the boat. And suddenly there's so much fish that they can't even pull it in. And they recognize that it's Jesus. And then they have all of this fish and it's amazing. So we were planning this chapel service. And we discovered that our seminary worship supply closet had a fishing net, an old style fishing net in it, because that is the kind of worship supply closet that this was. And so we got excited and we decided that the way we would set up the chapel was kind of to evoke a boat. We'd put this is an old stone chapel and we had empty space in the middle. We could do a lot of things, a lot of creativity in how we set it up. So we put the net on the stone floor and then we set up a couple rows of chairs in kind of a boat shape. So it kind of evoked the boat. And this was a great idea to use visuals and space to evoke the story. It was a great idea until one of the members of the choir got up from her chair on the net on the hard stone flagstones to sing, slipped on the net, fell hard, and dislocated her shoulder. And that, in case you're wondering, is not what I have been meaning when I say I'm going to talk about churching dangerously. Yikes. Do not put slippery things on stone floors. So what I don't mean is that churches should be actually dangerous. And maybe that goes without saying, but I actually do think sometimes there are things that are actually dangerous in churches. So we should be careful about what we set up and where we put things. We have signs telling people where to walk. You know, we try to walk on the pathway and not in the parking lot. Things like that, all the way from those specific things to things like doing background checks on people who work with children, ensuring that we have policies that keep people safe, doing what we can to ensure that when you come here, you are reasonably assured of being physically, emotionally, and spiritually safe. So that's not what I mean by churching dangerously. And I also don't mean that a church needs to seek out risk just because it's always better to make a risky decision. We should always do what's dangerous. What I mean by churching dangerously is being the church that matters in the reading. Being the church where we care deeply about what happens, we bake something sweet, imperfect but sweet for the bake sale. We answer those emails. We go to the meetings. We do the work because we care deeply about the church. Building a church that matters. And I also mean churches intentionally and collectively taking the risks that are need to be taken so that we can fully live out our faith and our mission. I mean things like spiritual communities reaching out beyond their comfort zones because something else is more important than being comfortable or having everything be smooth and easy with everyone we know here and the people we interact with outside the congregation. Not being the church that doesn't matter. Churching dangerously. And again, I think this is my third caveat, is that this is different than churches being in danger. There are, of course, plenty of churches and communities that are in danger just by existing. I'm thinking here of Black churches, of Muslim communities, of Jewish communities and centers, and the largely LGBT metropolitan community churches which have are all types of churches and spiritual communities that have faced violence and hate crimes just for existing and being who they are. So that's churches in danger. And I want to be clear that I don't mean in this sermon to call on churches that are already in danger to necessarily do more risky things. That's not necessarily my role as someone not from that community. And I want us to remember that for churches in danger, radical missional work includes self-care and self-preservation. Audre Lorde said, caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation. And that is an act of political warfare. So there may be a role in other churches to support the self-preservation, the radical act it is to just exist for some of those communities. And today I want to talk about churches like Chalice, where I don't think we're necessarily in danger by existing. But it is possible, and I argue, important for us to church dangerously. And by that I mean take intentional, carefully considered, and change-making risks to live out our mission and values. There it is. I mean things like in the early days of the AIDS crisis, congregations like the Unitarian Universalist Meeting House in Provincetown, who opened their doors and their hearts to HIV-positive people, largely gay men at that time, in the first dedicated AIDS ministry. I mean congregations who, in places and times where it was unusual to do so, loudly proclaiming welcome of same-sex couples and lesbian, bisexual, gay, and transgender people. I mean the congregations that are willing to tolerate and address any anxiety that comes about being labeled the gay church. Congregations of people who, no matter the variety of identities within that congregation, are willing to tolerate reactions of people around them. Sometimes scorn from neighbors, sometimes even violence for being a church that's identified with LGBT people. Churching dangerously. And I also mean, of course, Anthony and his network. I don't know if you caught, he's in Saskatchewan. And this was a project of our Canadian Unitarian brothers and sister churches responding to him and his family's video project. It's all of those messages. I don't know if there's a whole bunch more. That was an edited version of people emphatically supporting new guidelines in Canadian schools that are more fully accommodating to transgender students. So that's churching dangerously. He says at the end, responding to this anti-trans rap video, which watch and then like stop your eyes from bleeding, by the way. Anyway, he says, I think it's dangerous to tell Unitarians to speak out, because we will. Churching dangerously, of course, in this vein, I think also includes every congregation that makes sure that it has gender neutral or all genders restrooms available by changing all of the single occupancy restrooms to gender neutral or doing other steps to ensure that everyone can go to the bathroom. Churching dangerously. I also mean congregations in historically white denominations like ours, nurturing anti-racist and intentionally multicultural communities. Most of us are used to churching. This is a made-up word I made up about meaning being a church, building a church. Most of us are used to doing that only with people like us in terms of race and ethnicity and culture. I believe Martin Luther King said this, and it is still true, that 11 a.m. on Sunday morning is the most segregated hour in America. And so when I think of churching dangerously, I think of those congregations that buck that stereotype, like All Souls Church Unitarian in Washington, D.C., where I was a member, and which is struggling and bumping along to be a truly multicultural, multiracial, anti-racist congregation. And I will say, it did not feel like the church that doesn't matter, where there are no quarrels and no arguments and no one has an opinion. It can feel bumpy because we're used to the status quo. And so bumping up against that feels different, doesn't feel as smooth. And it matters. I think that building that kind of community is churching dangerously because it is dangerous to the status quo to recognize that we are all one human family. I also mean congregations like the First Unitarian Society of Denver, which a couple years ago became a sanctuary congregation for an undocumented immigrant facing deportation. His name is Arturo Hernandez Garcia, and he had been in the United States for a long time. He'd stayed in the U.S. after a visa had expired and was facing being deported away from his family, his community, including a U.S. citizen daughter. And so this is where the church comes in. Because, as you may know, I don't know if you know, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has made a statement that they won't enter churches or places of worship to arrest someone or detain someone to deport them. And so faith communities have been building on this idea of the sanctuary movement and in a new way, and partnering with immigrant communities to offer sanctuary to people facing deportation. And so that's like someone who's in deportation proceedings comes and lives in the church because they will be safe from being deported there. And the goals are to convince officials to set aside the deportation orders in that particular case, to use their discretion to say that that person is no longer an enforcement priority, and also to draw attention to the injustices and the suffering that exists in our current immigration system. And offering sanctuary is not something that a congregation does lightly. It is a major commitment of time, of energy, space, resources, congregational life. It has a big impact on the life of the congregation. It's a legal risk. It's extremely disruptive in both good and bad ways. But as far as I can tell, it can be really powerful and transformational. And I know a little bit more about this than I would normally because one of my good friends from seminary, Reverend Kirsten Homblett, was the beloved community coordinator in the Denver-Boulder area while this was going on. So she played a key role in facilitating that process and providing spiritual and organizational leadership. And so whether or not you would personally support something like that here, I'm exploring it as an example of what I mean to church dangerously. So the Denver church's experience of sanctuary was definitely churching. I would say it was building religious community, being religious community together, not just a social club or a political organization. Reverend Kirsten reminded me when I talked to her about this yesterday that providing sanctuary is a uniquely religious action. It's a way to participate in immigrant rights that no one else can do. The idea of the safety from deportation is specific to religious community. So it's a way, it requires a religious community to take that kind of action. It's also dangerous in some way because it requires some risk. It rocks the boat. There's an actual legal risk, of course, While no church that I know of has encountered significant legal trouble from participating in this, a church does face uncertainty, and the minister and the board have to be intentional about doing that. There's what's going to happen. How will the church interact with immigration enforcement and laws? So that's the risk-taking part of it. But it's churching dangerously because it is a chosen, carefully considered risk. Remember, I said it was their intentional, collective, carefully chosen risks that help the church to live out its mission more fully. And it's a risk, it's this kind of risk that's about stepping from a place of relative safety into sharing risk with people who are in some danger or who are already living in risk. As my friend Kirsten was telling me, a congregation of mostly Anglo-American U.S. citizens can get really anxious about the legal risk aspect. But she said it's an opportunity to learn what does that experience of anxiety and risk teach us about the anxiety and risk and danger undocumented people in the country face every day. She said it can be a powerful experience and helps, at least in her experience, helped the congregation be better companions in the work for immigrant justice. That's the other thing she kept saying, that it was an opportunity. Churching dangerously, I think, can look like if we're not careful, like something, oh, we just have to do because it's good. It's also an opportunity to see who we really are, to see if we can really live out the values that are important to us, to see if we really can do difficult, transformational things. What happens? What happens to us? What happens to the community? What do our UU values and theology look like in practice? Reverend Kirsten told me that First Unitarian Society is different now in some ways. They know that they can do hard things. They have found the strength that they have as a community. They know that they can rely on each other, that people in the community will step up, that people will help. Members of the community will help in a variety of different ways. They also have built a better network with their wider community. They have a reputation in the justice community as people who will really do stuff. The immigrant community has a level of trust in them that they didn't before. And the congregation, the individual members of the congregation, there's some their hearts are opened in a different way. They understand more the human stories that are behind the political or theoretical ideas that they've been learning about for a while. Immigration is not just something they're learning about in books and talking about in the abstract, but it's about Arturo and his family. And that's the other part, is their network is... their network is stronger and wider. They have relationship with one another, with Arturo, with his family, all the people who came to visit him, all the other congregations that supported them. They didn't go it alone. They were the physical host of the effort, but there was a network of, I think, 6 or 10 congregations that also stepped up. She said, they have radically expanded their network. So all that is First Unitarian Society. And at Chalice, our mission is open hearts, open minds, open doors, nurturing spirits, seeking justice within the wider world. What would it mean for us to church dangerously in service of that mission? How can we more fully open our own hearts, our own minds, our own doors? Who or what would we open them to? And what risks might we need to take to really live into that? Or if our mission is to open hearts, open minds, and open doors, what hearts, minds, and doors might need to be opened in the wider community, in Escondido, in North County, in the United States. And it is I think it's the work of the whole congregation and its leaders, of course, to engage in always having that question in mind, and to participate in how we answer it. And so as we do that, I have three words of wisdom drawn from those examples that I've shared in First Unitarian, which are: don't mistake being uncomfortable for being threatened or in actual danger. Like I said, churching dangerously should not be overwhelmingly dangerous, but it also doesn't usually feel comfortable. So another way to say that is, I do not call on us to fall and dislocate our shoulders, but I do see some dislocation required, right? Dislocation of assumptions, dislocation of oppression, dislocation of our priorities, maybe, shifts in relationships. It requires balancing carefully between what is safe enough for us to thrive and what is risky enough to spark transformation. So be able to be uncomfortable. Don't go it alone. Like I said, my friend Kirsten's congregation didn't do their sanctuary project with a small group or as the vision of only one person. It was something that they all committed to collectively. That's a large church, and they all committed to it. And they did it with support from a wider network. I think when we have collectively committed to something, it feels less dangerous. We can hold one another. We're more tied more deeply to it. So be willing to be uncomfortable. Don't go it alone. And take courage. Preachers are very fond of noting that courage, the word courage, comes from the word heart. Comes from Old French, which comes from Latin cor, heart. And we're fond of pointing out that courage is built from vulnerability and from connection. Courage is reinforced and created in a community. When we share deeply, you know what I care about. And then if you care about me, you want to care about that thing too. And when we weave together those things in that community, we build a net that helps to hold the effort that we're doing. I know that I am more able to take risks when it's something I deeply care about. I don't think courage and risk-taking comes from a rational place all the time. I think it comes from the heart. And that's when I know that taking the risk is important to me or to someone I care about, or to the community that I care about. So let's church dangerously. Let's think about what that could mean. We have an opportunity. We have opportunities, I don't even know what all of them are, to be a beacon of justice and joy and love to one another and to the wider community. Let's take that net of our community and cast it out and see what abundance we might pull up. Thank you.